From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Sandler Center for the Performing Arts in Virginia Beach, Virginia, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. It is great to be here in Virginia. It is such an exciting week to be in our business because, of course, as everybody knows, this week marked the beginning of the race for the vice presidential nomination. Now, as it so happens, we here at Wait, Wait have become a kind of informal vetting committee. Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania was on everybody's short list for VP, as is Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano. Both of them have been on our show recently. They came on to show they had the stamina to stay awake through something morbid and dull, a skill useful in attending funerals. So today, Virginia Senator Jim Webb, a possible Democratic vice presidential choice, will join us to play our game later on, because the road to the Naval Observatory goes through Carl Castle. But in the meantime, call us up for your own vetting. You can answer some questions about the week's news. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Nan from San Francisco.
Hey, Nan, how are things in San Francisco?
Beautiful.
Oh, you always say that, you San Franciscans. And yet it's true, I know. What do you
do
there?
I am a advertising copywriter, and I'm also a curatorial intern at SF MoMA.
SF MoMA?
San Francisco Museum of Modern Art.
I imagine that in San Francisco, the modern art is way modern.
Well, it is swinging.
It's swinging. That's good to hear. Well, welcome to our show, Nan. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and author and the man to blame for everything you will find at Baudet.com, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Nan.
Hey, Tom.
Also say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, is Roxanne Roberts.
Hey, Roxanne.
Hello, Nan.
And finally, a humorist and author, most recently of P.J. O'Rourke on The Wealth of Nations, part of the Books That Changed the World series, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hello.
Hello.
So, Nan, you're going to start us off with Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, of course, right here, is going to recreate for you three moments from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice, and your very own home answering device, whatever that may be.
Okay.
Ready to play?
I am ready.
Here's your first quote.
I am absolutely certain that generations from now will be able to look back and tell our children that this was the moment when the rise of the oceans began to slow, and our planet began to heal.
That was someone announcing that he was the presidential nominee, and maybe a whole lot more. Who?
That would be Barack Obama.
It would be. He became the first African-American major party nominee for president in U.S. history. He celebrated the historic moment by speaking to a crowd of thousands in the same hall where the Republicans will have their convention later this year. And then, as a follow-up, he fed the masses assembled with a single power bar and half a bottle of vitamin water. Then he put a curse in the hall so that the Republicans, later in August, when they try to drop balloons from the ceiling, it will instead rain non-fat latte upon them.
And the Philistines shall flee.
And they shall rue the day that they doubted the power. Now, meanwhile, his rival, these last 6 months or more, Hillary Clinton, took her time admitting the inevitable. First, on that same night, she congratulated him, but refused to say for what exactly. Perhaps for being such a sharp dresser, we don't know. A few days later, though, she did announce that she was suspending, not ending, her campaign and would endorse Obama on Friday. She changed that to Saturday. Then suddenly, Hillary announced she wasn't quitting after all and was going to fight on to Denver and beyond. But that turned out to be just Bill wearing a pantsuit and a wig. So how do you guys feel about how all this ended? Can you believe it's over?
I'm so relieved.
Really?
Not me.
Really?
Not me, no. I mean, I lose a joke every time one of these people drops out, you know? Yeah. In the case of Hillary, I lose thousands.
I know. All that kicking around, you can't do anymore.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem fair.
I know. Yeah.
Well, I admired the column in the Washington Post this week by Ruth Marcus, comparing this to Lee's surrender to Grant at Appomattox and how generous Grant was in the terms. And Obama took that cue and has allowed Hillary's campaign staff to keep their sidearms and horses.
Yes. All right, very good, Nan. Here is your next quote.
It was Pavlovian, really, as if some handler had run him through his paces over and over, administering an electric shock each time he ended a sentence without revealing his dental work.
That was Gail Collins of the New York Times. She was reviewing the rhetorical performance of someone who also gave a speech on the same night as Obama's victory. So who tried to steal some of the limelight by flashing his dentures?
I think that would be John McCain in New Orleans.
It was, in fact. So somebody in the McCain campaign decided it would be a neat idea if McCain gave a speech on national TV on the same night as the greatest political orator of our day gave his history-making acceptance speech. That aide, we assume, is now applying Preparation H to his face to try to erase the savage bite marks left by the candidate. Now, the speech, a kind of a preemptive attack on Obama, looked decent on paper, but McCain got universally bad reviews for his weirdly robotic delivery, punctuated with strange and inopportune smiles in front of a sickly green background. It was all delivered to about 100 equally grumpy supporters. His campaign also got bad reviews for the McCain campaign slogan, "A Leader We Can Believe In." It's a blatant, vaguely authoritarian ripoff of Obama's "Change We Can Believe In." So the McCain campaign went to their second choice, "A Leader You Will Be Afraid to Tick Off." All right. We're going to leave politics behind, Nan, for your last quote. Carl, if you would.
I walked 47 miles of barbed wire. Used a cobra snake for a necktie. Got a brand new house on the roadside made out of some rattlesnake hide. I got a brand new chimney made on top made out of human skulls. Now come on, darling, let's take a little walk. Tell me, who do you love?
All right, Carl.
Yeah.
That dude rocks.
We're all fanning ourselves.
Yeah.
If any of you smoked, I'm sure you'd be holding up your lighters right now. So that was a big hit by a legendary and influential musician. He died this week at the age of 79. Who was it?
George Thorogood?
although the fact that you're giving Thorogood credit for that song is such an ironic tribute to this man's career. His other big hit song, this was a hint, was actually titled after himself. It was his own name.
Sam Cooke.
No, I'll just give you the answer. It's Bo Diddley.
Okay.
Bo Diddley died this week. He was born Elias Bates. He took the name Bo Diddley, and he invented one of the signature sounds of rock, but he never really got the credit or money he deserved for that. For example, he was forever banned after one appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. He went on live TV, and he played his own song rather than the country tune he was supposed to sing. Sullivan was furious, banned him forever. We imagine, true to form, that this week several dozen less talented white musicians are figuring out how to rip off his funeral. Carl, how did Nan do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. Nan had two correct answers, so Nan, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Fabulous. Thank you.
We want to remind everyone that most weeks they can join us at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Roxanne, the Army is trying to do its best by the soldiers suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
But they might have done a little better than they did at Fort Benning, where they sent shell-shocked soldiers to live in a barracks right next to what?
A firing range.
In fact, yes. The soldiers are part of what is called the Warrior Transition Unit at Fort Benning. Many of them are unable to deal with the sounds and stresses that remind them of combat. So, of course, the barracks provided for them are clean and well-appointed and 200 yards from an active firing range. Superior officers told the Washington Post that none of the soldiers had complained. They said that. Instead, they seemed to be happily occupying themselves, rocking back and forth and weeping. However, Pentagon officials, upset over the revelations in the Post, they've said they'll make it up to the soldiers by giving all of them the original director's cut DVD of Apocalypse Now, and as a special treat, a private fireworks display on the 4th of July. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
This is Aaron Levine from Arlington Heights.
Hey, how are things in Arlington Heights?
Just fine, thank you.
You know, I've been to Arlington Heights because it's near
really?
Chicago. It's not very high, Arlington Heights.
That's true. When we moved here, I didn't find any hills until we went to Starved Rock State Park.
Yeah.
But the whole state was flat.
Did you feel taken when you realized that?
No, it was a lot like Silver Spring where I grew up.
Yeah, not very
no
silver.
Springs, no springs, no silver, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Aaron, welcome to our show. It's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Aaron's topic?
Thanks to the Internet, I don't get into trouble when I don't wear pants while shopping.
We all know how much the Internet has improved our lives. Before the advent of the online world, people were required to actually be the person they claimed to be while socializing. Well, this week we read about a unique online service that had us once again thanking Al Gore for inventing the whole thing. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about ways the Internet is making life better. Your job, of course, pick the real one. Ready to do that?
Yes, sir.
All right. First, let's hear from PJ O'Rourke.
It's the rapture when you born-agains all disappear and Catholics like me and Jews like Peter and all Democrats except Jimmy Carter get left behind to... face a fate worse than reading those Left Behind books. And now the rapture has gotten even better. Sign up with youvebeenleftbehind.com and heaven-bound you can send email messages to your stuck-with-the-Antichrist friends. You can tell them where you put the car keys or when to feed the dog or just say, na-na-na-na-na-na. The emails will be sent when the website's key Christian staffers failed to log in for 6 days because they're gone, you know? But this leaves us with a big question. I mean, who keeps the website up and running after its webmasters vanish? Well, who's called Satan by everyone on the Internet? Bill Gates will be sending me my email from Mike Huckabee.
An internet service that will send messages after the rapture to your friends and loved ones left behind. Your next story of a new convenience courtesy of the World Wide Web comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Frustrated that his 14-year-old son spent more time with YouTube videos and chat rooms than his homework, Jeff Kaufman decided to fight internet with what he calls pop quizzes. Kaufman, a high school principal in Newark, programmed son Kyle's computer so he couldn't access the web until he took a 5-question quiz on freshman English, history, algebra, or Spanish. When Kyle got a perfect score, the computer applauded and gave him 3 hours of web time. 3 correct answers earned him 1 hour, and 2 or less caused the program to shout, "Hit the books, buddy," and shut down for the rest of the calendar day. Quote, "He hated it, and me at first," Kaufman told the Daily News, "but he loved the web more." Kyle graduated last week with a 3.6 GPA. Now Dad has expanded pop quizzes for grades 7 to 12 and is launching his new business, appropriately enough, on Father's Day.
Internet pop quizzes. You want to use it, you got to learn something. Your last story about the Internet making someone's life a little better comes, of course, from Tom Baudet.
If you've ever recognized that critical voice in your head as your mother's, now it really might be. Using recently declassified military technology used to maneuver troops in the field through GPS tracking and inner-ear receivers, Mommy.net, a joint venture of Google and Parenting Magazine, has launched an online service that allows parents to place cochlear implants in their children's ears, track their location on a secure website, and send live and pre-programmed voice messages. Gentle reminders to sit up straight, don't mumble, and you shouldn't pick at that pimple can now fill the gap in your child's day between breakfast and dinner. Since the implants must be removed by a qualified physician, some children may choose to wear their receivers into their young adult years. That girl is no good for you. I see you had time for a concert last weekend, but not to come home, can fill your kids with doubt and shame long after the age of consent. Google engineers laughed off the suggestion that Mommy.net could at some point become self-aware, prompting John Connor to return from the future to murder Sarah Connor with his own bare hands.
All right, let's review your choices. From PJ O'Rourke, a website called youvebeenleftbehind.com that will send messages to other people once you've been raptured beyond the reach of a keyboard. From Roxanne Roberts, a new service that allows your children or dependents to use the Internet only when they've done some real homework. Or from Tom Baudet, Mommy.net, a service which will always follow around your children and bother them even when you can't. Which of these is the real story of an Internet service?
I'll take Tom Baudet's story.
You're going to take Tom's story?
Yeah.
Cochlear implants, broadcasting, nagging, automated nags from your parents to you wherever you go.
Absolutely.
How's your mom?
And how'd you know mine?
All right. Is it a nightmare or is it true? Well, we actually spoke to the person who has actually come up with this service.
I have people scattered around the United States who have to log in on a daily basis. If they fail to log in for 3 days, the system assumes that the rapture has taken place.
That was Mark Hurd, the founder owner of the very real website, youvebeenleftbehind.com. I'm so sorry you didn't get it right, but I have to say, in this particular case, I'm so glad you didn't. Because I don't know if I'd want to live in a world in which Tom's story was true. However, you have earned a point for him, which is a wonderful and gracious thing to do. So thank you so much for playing.
Thank you, Eric.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. And now the game where we invite notable people onto the show to answer questions about things they didn't bother to note. James Webb has done a lot of things in his life. He was an amateur boxer as a youth, then a Marine officer in Vietnam, a novelist, a journalist, at one point the Secretary of the Navy in the Reagan administration. But nobody gave him much of a chance early on to get his current job, senator from the great Commonwealth of Virginia. Nonetheless, he won his seat in 2006. He has now published another book, this time titled A Time to Fight. He joins us now. Senator Webb, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Nice to be with you.
Senator, I almost apologize for this, but you know it's a political season. We've got to ask this question. You have said in your writings and your book that you have 3 tattoos, but you do not say what they are, sir. What are your tattoos?
I think if you want to know that, you'll just have to catch me at the beach. Son.
Really? You're not going to tell me? Because we were guessing. We didn't know. We were imagining a little tramp stamp in the lower back. We didn't know.
Well, okay.
Like I say, catch me at Virginia Beach sometime.
All right, we will. We'll do that.
If you're in a swimsuit, we'll be able to see at least one of them.
If I'm in a swimsuit, you'll be able to see two.
All right. Ooh. Okay. All right. Interesting information.
Nice tack, Roxanne.
Very well done, sir. Well done. Well played. Your book, your newest book, has some has some, you tell the stories of your life and your background and how you came by your beliefs. You've been a boxer, you were in the military, of course, very many military roles, very opinionated, as you yourself say. Do those traits help you in the Senate, which I understand is a deliberative body, not combative, not
confrontational? You know, I think there were a lot of people who expected that because of the way that our campaign was run, that I would come in and use that sort of style. But I think if you look at what we've been able to do over the last 16, 17 months, I think the people who voted for me would be very proud of what we've been able to do. We've worked across party lines. The best example of that is this GI Bill. I worked very hard across party lines with the veterans groups. We got 58 co-sponsors in the Senate, 11 of them Republicans, and we just got a vote of 75 to 22. And you don't do that if you're just going out to pick a fight.
Sure. It was well done. We've heard that there's a lot of play at fighting a conflict in the Senate. People who will get up and make speeches condemning their colleagues for their foolishness and their silliness will then go back behind the scenes and be good friends. Do you find that to be the case in the Senate, that a lot of public combat becomes collegial behind the scenes?
It's probably the other way around.
Oh, really? I mean, you're saying people secretly hate each other but act nice in front of the cameras?
There's a lot of collegiality. There's a chapter in my book called Scorpions in a Jar.
Yes.
And, you know, when you have to deal with, 99 other very strong personalities every day inside that environment, you tend to want to have a collegial relationship while you're debating, and you know people all obviously have their own personal arguments, et cetera, behind the scenes. So it's kind of the flip side, actually, of what you just said.
That's interesting.
Have you ever wanted to slug someone?
In the Senate?
Yeah.
If you haven't, we've all wanted to slug someone in the Senate.
I haven't found it necessary to have that urge.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you about this. Everyone knows that your name has been bandied about as a potential vice presidential running mate for Barack Obama. In fact, you introduced Barack Obama as he launched his general campaign in Virginia earlier this week. I'm not going to ask you if you're going to do it, but I do want to ask you, how do you feel about being in that position, to have your name, all the pundits shooting your name back and forth, measuring you up, measuring you down?
Well, there's a lot of space to fill right now in terms of political commentary. Mm-hmm. And I think that the strongest thing that I can say is that I'm not looking for that position. I'm very honored to be serving in the Senate right now and representing people of Virginia.
I just want to say, you know that the vetting process for the vice presidential nominee is very, very severe. You're going to have to reveal the third tattoo. I'm just saying. Probably. And it's not going to be fun, because it's going to be like you're going to have to go into a back room with someone like Warren Christopher and show it to him. And it's just going to be not fun.
Right, that's
it. He's not doing it. Well, Senator Jim Webb, we are so honored to have you with us. We have asked you here, though, to play a game, and we're going to call it
Money Can't Buy Happiness, But It Can Sure Rent It.
Which may be the lesson of the life of Huntington Hartford, wealthy playboy, artistic dilettante, a man who loved not too wisely, but perhaps too numerously. He died this past month at the age of 97. We're going to ask you three questions about his remarkable life. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine, something even Mr. Hartford's money could never buy. Carl, who is Senator James Webb playing for?
The senator is playing for Barbara Gornto of Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Here we go. First question. He tried to work for a living a number of times during his life, even though he was born to the wealth of the AMP fortune. At one point, he tried to be a reporter, but he didn't do so well at that job. In fact, he once failed to file a story on time. Well, because why? Was it A, he couldn't find a place to park his yacht? B, he decided he couldn't write the story without his favorite fountain pen, which happened to be at his summer home in Switzerland? Or C, he became paralyzed with indecision over whether to use the word can't or cannot?
Sounds like a B.
Sounds like a B. He couldn't write the story without his favorite fountain pen, and it happened to be in Switzerland at his chalet. Is that your choice?
That's my choice.
No, I'm afraid it was A. He couldn't find a place to park his yacht. He was working for a newspaper in New York, and he had taken his yacht over to Long Island to cover the story, and he came back to the city, and he couldn't find a place to tie it up, so he missed his deadline.
How many times has that happened to you, PJ?
Oh, I hate it when that happens. I just hate it when that happens. You know, sometimes I'll just throw the anchor out anywhere, you know. Swim to shore, but I never miss the deadline.
All right. You still have two chances here. Hartford said that among his prouder moments in his long and interesting life was his service in the Navy during World War II. But he didn't do so well at that either. What happened during his Navy service? A, he went AWOL for a month after discovering the girls on Fiji would do almost anything for a Coca-Cola. B, he ran his ship aground after he mistook fathoms on a chart for feet. Or C, he independently decided to liberate a small Pacific island that turned out to be an oil platform.
Given everything you said, I'd probably have to take A.
You're going to take A, that the girls on Fiji are just thrilled for the pause that refreshes? Is that your
From
choice?
From his perspective.
From his perspective. Is that your choice, sir?
Yes.
No, I'm afraid it was B, he mistook fathoms for feet, or most likely feet for fathoms, so he managed to run aground. It was the second time he ran his boat aground, but he said the first time wasn't his fault.
He was trying to make a deadline, and...
Now it gets. All right, your last question. Huntington Hartford never smoked and never drank in his life, but he did have trouble controlling his appetite for female company. He married four times, and each time his wife left him because of his compulsive infidelities. For his second wife, Marjorie, the last straw was when what happened? A, he introduced her at a party as Helen. No, Marilyn. No, damn it. Which one are you? B, Marjorie came home to find her own clothing in boxes and her girlfriend's clothing in her closets. Or C, he responded to accusations of womanizing by saying to her, "You're like caviar, my darling. You're absolutely my favorite, but you can't expect me to eat it at every meal."
Oh boy, I'll go with B.
You're going to go with B, the clothing in the closets?
Right.
You're right! There you are. Marjorie said of finding the other woman's stuff in her closet, quote, "Hunt never understood why I was so upset." Carl, how did Senator Jim Webb do in our quiz?
Well, the senator needed at least two correct answers to win for Barbara Grunto, but he had just one correct answer.
Ah, well. Well, as you know, through your long history and experience in the military, you can't win them all.
Well, my apologies to Barbara. I know how much that voice would have meant to her.
I know. That's terrible.
But you didn't really want a senator that knew the answers to those questions, did you?
I think sometimes ignorance of our quizzes is a sign of a life well lived.
Yes,
don't you
I
think?
Do too, yeah.
Speaking of which, Jim Webb is a U.S. Marine, an author, a journalist, a public servant, and now, of course, the senator from the Commonwealth of Virginia. Senator Webb, thank you so much for your service. Good luck to you in the Senate, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl will channel in his eerie fashion even more newsmakers in another round of Who's Carl This Time. If you'd like to guess who Carl is impersonating, give us a call, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, good news for the morals of our young people. Kmart is now offering what kind of cutting-edge loungewear for young women?
For young, when you say young women, you mean kids?
No, I mean sort of teenagers.
Teenagers.
Teenagers and older. Young women.
All right. So is
specifically
this
pre-married young women.
This is not chastity loungewear.
Yes, it is. Oh. Kmart
it's
is
sweatpants
selling,
where the string gets stuck.
They're selling what we're going to call abstinence pants. I'm going to quote the Kmart online catalog. "These athletic pants boldly proclaim just where she stands by pointing out that, quote, true love waits, unquote, in a large screen print on the front and back. because what better way is there to advertise your determination to remain sexually pure than plastering it across your buttocks? If the products succeed, Kmart plans to expand the line to include purity thongs, the Look Me in the Eye brand push-up bra, and a really tight halter top with the slogan printed on it, "My other outfit is a burqa."
Very good.
Tom, this week, astronauts aboard the International Space Station received a shipment of supplies delivered by the space shuttle Discovery. Of all the items brought, perhaps none was more anticipated and needed than what?
The parts to fix the toilet.
Exactly right.
Yeah. You know, that was one of the most interesting items in the news this week, I thought, because they showed video that I saw this week where an actually pretty hittable female astronaut was demonstrating this, which is a rare thing. When you know, a hittable astronaut, you don't even hear that phrase very often.
I was agog at hearing that from you, Tom.
I know. But happily married guys can say stuff like that because nobody takes us seriously. Anyway.
Anyway, Toy, let's get back to that. Yes. It's been 2 weeks since the pump on the space station's toilet went out. Needless to say, things have been pretty tense up there. The three crew members may do by flushing out the commode by hand, jettisoning the contents into space. Of course, part of the problem was getting a plumber up to orbit. It was difficult, a lot of technical demands. It took NASA weeks just to design a spacesuit that provided protection but allowed the butt crack to be exposed.
Wow.
Yeah. I saw, how many months did it take NASA to get the plumber on the phone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. PJ, maybe our favorite story of the week, Frederick Bauer of Cincinnati, Ohio, died last month at the age of 89. He was most famous for inventing the famous air-sealed Pringles potato chip can. And so it turns out that before he died, he requested what?
That his ashes be sealed in a Pringles potato chip can.
You are correct, sir. Now,
will it give that satisfying vacuum release when you pull it?
Mr. Bauer did not invent the Pringles potato chip itself. That, of course, was the work of Satan.
But until he came along, they were just laying around
exactly.
Loose.
You should go down to the dry goods store and scoop them out of a barrel into your sack. No, he did invent the famous air-sealed can in which they come. So he asked that his remains be sealed for eternity in one of them. And his sons honored his wishes. This is true. What they did was they stopped by a convenience store on the way to the funeral parlor. His son, Larry Bauer, said, quote, "My siblings and I briefly debated what flavor to use. But I said, look, we need to use the original."
Wait, there's a flaw in this story, though. Because if they bought it from a convenience store, then they would have to shush the opening to get the Pringles out and put his ashes in, and then how do you seal it again?
Well, they have a little plastic reseal cover. Have you never eaten a Pringle?
No, it wouldn't be sealed, but I don't think it'll spoil.
Yeah.
Do you think, and
it is just ashes.
And could all his ashes fit in one Pringles
can? Apparently what they did was they put some of the ashes in a Pringles can, and some of the ashes they spread to other urns that other family members were putting. But some of his ashes are in a Pringles
can. The overflow went into a couple Altoid boxes. They got at the register.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Kevin McKenna from Providence, Rhode Island.
Providence, beautiful city, capital of Rhode Island. What do you do there in Providence?
I'm an arborist.
You're an arborist?
I am.
That always strikes me to be a great job, just spending your day outside dealing with trees.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I love my job.
Do you feel the trees have personalities? Do you get attached to them?
I don't know about attached.
That would be bad if you did, because you have to cut them down on occasion. I know.
So we do.
Keep that in mind. Kevin, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will read three quotes from this week's news. If you correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Let's do it.
Here's your first quote.
"He's a really dishonest reporter. That's just five or six blatant lies in there.
but he's a real slimy guy.
That's how someone ended his days on the campaign trail this week, by attacking a reporter working for Vanity Fair. Who was that?
That's got to be Bill Clinton.
It was. One of the stranger things to happen during this long campaign was the self-destruction of Bill Clinton. It was supposed to be his wife's secret weapon, but the secret turned out to be he kept blowing himself up. It all came to an end as the campaign ended and Vanity Fair ran an expose on the former president, suggesting he's been acting like an amoral girl-chasing money hound. There were also some revelations, including the suggestion that he and actress Gina Gershon had been shopping for a blue dress together, if you will. So he exploded at a public event. He attacked the author of the story with all kinds of bad and impolitic names. I mean, what is he going to do next? Because this was unprecedented, this strange return to the national stage and the campaign trail on behalf of his wife. Do you think he's right now, like, taking Chelsea aside and saying, okay, look.
No, he did say, this is true. He said that she had really blossomed and that before she'd gone out to campaign for a mother, he would have thought she never was interested in politics, but he thinks she has a real knack for it.
Oh, my God. All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
It may be the auto industry's version of the leisure suit.
That was Mark Phelan of the Detroit Free Press. He was saying goodbye to a big gas guzzler that apparently has had its day. GM says it'll try to sell the brand. If it can't do that, it might just disappear. It. What's the vehicle we're talking about?
The Hummer.
Exactly, the Hummer. The monstrous military-style SUV survived combat in the first Gulf War, but it couldn't beat $4 a gallon gas. Sales are down nearly 40%. GM is looking to sell the brand. Most analysts say there isn't much of a market left. Some say a Russian billionaire might want it. Meanwhile, potential Hummer buyers are desperate for some other way to assert their distinct identity. Many of them are being forced to settle for simply tattooing the word jerkface onto their foreheads. Once they dump the Hummer, GM is going to concentrate its resources, they say, on their new plug-in electric hybrid, the Chevrolet Volt. The Volt. Oh, that's manly. Why don't they just call it the Wussy and be done with it? Yeah.
Well, PJ, pretty soon you'll be able to add to that fleet of Suburbans of yours.
The thing is, if you leave the engine running on our Suburban, you can just keep filling it up. You just set the little thing on the gas nozzle and it just, you know.
All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
All the magazine coverage in the world hasn't really moved the needle among men, many of whom suggest they would rather be shot than sit through that movie.
That was Variety talking about the number one movie in the country. It grossed $55 million its first weekend with more than 8 out of every 10 of those tickets sold to women. What's the movie?
Sex in the City.
Sex in the City. He said,
Just shoot me.
Masculine
right
resignation.
You're saying you didn't see it?
I might survive a gunshot.
Four years after the TV series ended on HBO, Sex in the City arrived on the big screen, of course. During its first weekend and release, 85% of ticket buyers were women. Another 10% were gay men. And the final 5% were boyfriends who had done something really, really bad to their girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just realized that hittable astronaut remark I made a while ago, I may end up seeing this movie.
Carl, how did Kevin do in our quiz?
Well, Kevin had 3 correct answers, so Peter, Kevin wins our prize.
Yes. Well done, sir. Yes. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Tom Beaudet has the lead. He has 3 points. Roxanne Roberts and P.J. O'Rourke are tied for second. Each has 2.
We have flipped a coin. P.J. has elected to go first. So here we go. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank. One day after undergoing brain surgery, blank was up and walking
Ted
around.
Ted Kennedy.
Yes. Chicago, Madrid, Tokyo, and Rio de Janeiro were named as the 4 finalists to host the blanks in 2016.
Olympics.
Right. With the word Gurdon, G-U-E-R-D-O-N, eighth grader Samir Mishra won this year's blank.
Spelling bee.
Right, the National Spelling Bee. A British man successfully sued his travel agency because his holiday resort in Greece was filled with blank.
Greeks?
No, Germans. And what may be a huge advance for reducing greenhouse gases caused by methane, scientists in New Zealand say they have found a way to cut down on blank.
Cow burping.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also
yeah.
the other
and other. Yes,
Paul right. Sills, the founder of Chicago's improvisational comedy group Blank, died at age 80.
Second City.
Right. A firefighter in Austin, Texas, was fired for delaying an emergency response so he could blank.
Light his grill.
No, almost. Go next door to the burger house to pick up his food order.
Ah.
Sure, Michael Pooler had sworn to serve the public, but he just placed an order for a hamburger. And what difference could 2 minutes make? Acting Fire Chief Evans immediately fired Pooler for the burger run. Pooler says he plans to appeal the decision just as soon as his pizza is delivered. Carl, how did PJ do in our quiz?
PJ had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points and the lead.
Roxanne, you're up next. Here we go. Fill in the blank. According to an internal investigation, political appointees at NASA reduced, marginalized, or mischaracterized studies on blank from 2004 through 2006.
The safety.
No, not say studies on global warming. After a judge ordered their return, all of the children taken from a blank's ranch were returned to their parents.
The polygamous
sect. Right, polygamous sect. Vol-au-vent, pasta and shrimp and a pumpkin cream sauce, lemon mousse and white wines from Orvieto were served in Rome to attendees at the UN summit trying to deal with world blank.
Hunger.
Right. The designer who made it fashionable for women to wear pants, blank, died at age 71.
Yves Saint Laurent.
Right. In order to bring back a bit of diversity to the pretty much all-white Corvallis, Oregon farmer's market, an African-American named Jeff Oliver set up a blank.
I have no idea.
The stand was called a Meet a Black Guy booth. Prominent Chicago political fundraiser blank was convicted on corruption charges on Wednesday.
Resco.
You said it. Resco.
Right.
For the fourth time in 11 seasons, the Detroit Red Wings won the blank.
Stanley Cup.
Right. In Iowa, two thieves who tried but could not open a safe were arrested after they blanked.
Called the police and asked for help.
No. After they left behind a note that read, "Bleep you and your safe." The burglars wanted to let the owner of the Des Moines Golf and Country Club know just what they thought about his bleeping safe, so they left a bleeping note scribbled on a piece of paper. The hapless father and son burglars were caught a short time later when the bleeping tennis rackets and shoes they'd stolen after abandoning the safe fell out of their bleeping car in front of the bleeping security guard. Carl, how did Roxanne do on our quiz?
Roxanne had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 12 and is tied for PJ with the lead.
Well done. All right. How many, then, does Tom Baudet need to win?
5 correct answers.
This is for the game, fill in the blank. Making his first appearance before a military tribunal, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind of the blank attacks, asked to be martyred.
The 9/11 attacks.
Right. Mistakes in the handling of nuclear weapons reportedly forced the ouster of the 2 top leaders of the blank.
The Air Force.
Right. Because of fuel costs, United Airlines announced it was cutting jobs, planes, flights, and its low-cost arm, known as blank.
Ted.
Right. Charles Moskos, the sociologist behind the military's controversial blank policy, died at age 74.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right. In Illinois, it was determined that at the Naperville Central High graduation, both the valedictorian and the principal blanked.
Showed up drunk.
No, plagiarized their speeches.
Oh,
in a
right.
sign that the housing crisis is affecting everyone, legendary late-night sidekick blank is fighting to avoid foreclosure on his home.
Ed McMahon.
Right. Entertainment Tonight is investigating whether they were fooled when they reported that blank had given birth to twins.
Angelina Jolie.
Right. A homeowner in Japan was stunned when he discovered that for the past year a woman had been blanking.
Living in his closet.
Exactly right. Sort of like the borrowers, only with big people.
A bachelor. You think you'd notice. I mean, only a guy would not notice somebody living in his closet.
Sure.
You know?
Anyway, so this bachelor living in Japan kept noticing food missing from his kitchen. So after installing video cameras that showed someone sneaking around while he was gone, he searched everywhere. He finally found a woman lying on her side in a drawer in his closet. She had snuck a mattress in there. Even the owner said she was neat and clean. Looking back, though, he says he should have figured it out one morning when his closet said to him, You're not going out in that, are you? Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
He needed 5 correct answers. Tom had 7 correct answers.
Wow.
So 16 points. Tom Baudette is this week's champion.
Thank you, Dan.
Oh, he dusted us.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict Hillary Clinton's role in the Obama fall campaign. But first, let me tell you, the support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring. Catalog at lumberliquidators.com. The members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners, on the web at realtor.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world at macfound.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, she is getting ready to concede. She's given it up. So what role will Hillary Clinton play in Barack Obama's national campaign? Roxanne Roberts.
She'll be Obama's babysitter and bedtime storyteller. In her version of Sleeping Beauty, the beautiful princess wakes up in 2016 and she's president.
P.J. O'Rourke.
Well, I think she's going to be a huge help to Obama. She's going to capture Dorothy and Toto. She's going to turn the flying monkeys loose on McCain. And as long as Barack doesn't drop a house on her, I think she'll be, you know.
And Tom Baudette.
She will insist on becoming his personal bodyguard and food taster.
Well, if Hillary Clinton does any of those things in the Obama campaign panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudette, P.J. O'Rourke, and Roxanne Roberts. Special thanks to Jan Johnson, Bert Schmidt, and everyone at member station WHRV in Norfolk, Virginia. Thanks to our audience here at the Sandler Center for Performing Arts. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.